This news brief brought to you by the International News Net.
U.S. officials say there's growing evidence Pakistan's ISI spy agency encouraged a Pakistani militant group, the Haqqani Network, to carry out last week's attack on the U.S. Embassy and NATO headquarters in Kabul. A U.S. Senate committee voted this week to make $1 billion in U.S. aid to flood-ravaged Pakistan, conditional on a crackdown on militant groups. Former Afghan President Burhanuddin Rabbani was killed Tuesday in a suicide bombing. A survivor of the attack, an aide to the former president, said Rabbani was lured to his death by the bomber, who claimed he was representing a mysterious figure mediating between the government and the Taliban's senior leadership. NATO leaders Wednesday authorized a 90-day extension of the alliance's mission in Libya. NATO began enforcement of a four-month no-fly zone over Libya in March. NATO fighter jets have flown more than 20,000 sorties over Libya, dropping thousands of bombs to take out Muammar Gaddafi's command centers and military materiel. Hundreds of civilians have been reported killed. Amnesty International says it has uncovered evidence that rebel forces in Libya have committed gross human rights abuses, some amounting to war crimes. The rights group also reveals the Western media deliberately ignored or covered up the widespread atrocities. In a report released Tuesday, Amnesty accuses the rebels of unlawful killings, arbitrary arrests, and widespread torture of civilians, mostly black foreigners. The report also confirms widely held concerns about the NTC's ability to unite the country and oversee a peaceful transition. Many attacks are focused on blacks suspected of being sympathetic to ousted dictator Muammar Gaddafi. The report states angry groups of supporters of the February 17th revolution shot, hanged, and lynched dozens of captured soldiers and suspected foreign mercenaries, and did so with total impunity. Gaddafi's supporters have accused NATO of killing up to 800 civilians. Amnesty says both the NTC and Gaddafi's forces are to blame. U.S. combat troops in Iraq may be heading to the exits, but the U.S. government's enormously expensive intervention there is hardly coming to an end. U.S. officials are planning to expand the gargantuan embassy in Baghdad, a heavily fortified, self-contained compound the size of Vatican City, by far the largest embassy the world has ever seen. Inside its high walls, guard towers and machine gun emplacements ring not just the embassy itself, but more than 20 other buildings. The number of personnel under the authority of the U.S. ambassador will swell from 8,000 to about 16,000.
More details on these stories, visit innworldreport.net.
You are listening to the Rule of Law Radio Network at ruleoflawradio.com. Live free speech talk radio at its best.
You're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia, and it's the 6th of January 2012, our first show for the year, and we're going to get straight into a very intense barrage of information in today's show. There's a lot to cover, a lot to talk about. I want to run through some headlines from the Twitter Truth News stream, and then we'll be having some discussion of the more overarching geopolitical issues. My name's Hereward Fenton. Truth News Radio Australia is a fully grassroots effort here, and we try to address things that are both local and international with a degree of thoroughness and scepticism, and bypassing a lot of the media misinformation and trying to deconstruct why this spin and misinformation is occurring. So I'm going to kick off with some Australian news here. Another nanny state headline here, phone taps to nab tax cheats. I find a lot of the news from Australia tends to be nanny state news. We don't tend to have a lot of I guess, news that is of extreme global significance, but there has been an endless stream of stories coming out about the various measures that the nanny state government is taking to limit the freedoms and to invade the privacy of people in Australia. So here we have another one, phone taps to nab tax cheats. The Australian Tax Office wants the power to use police phone tap information to catch tax cheats. The ATO is aiming to charge tax on wealth that can't be explained by people's legal income. But the potential for misuse of the power has been questioned by Attorney General John Rau, who said it could only be applied on a case-by-case basis. The ATO currently gives information to police about the tax records of suspected criminals to help bring them to justice, but says the exchange should be a two-way process. Enabling the ATO to receive and use police intercept information for the purpose of raising a taxation assessment would enhance the Commonwealth's ability to address unexplained wealth associated with organised crime. And that's a quote there from the ATO itself. The inquiry is working out why a 2009 law that would allow unexplained wealth to be confiscated from suspected criminals has failed to bring any cases before the courts, despite law enforcement agencies lobbying for the powers for years. Well, there's a couple of issues there, one being this attempt to find out information about unexplained wealth, which they consider to be a problem in itself. And that goes back several years, that they've actually been trying to bring in laws to basically monitor people's wealth independently of any normal process where you just basically put in a tax return and you get your assessment at the end of the year. They're not happy with that. They want more intrusive powers. And of course, as it says here, the police have been able to get information from the tax department, but now the tax department wants to be able to get information from the police. So yet another nail in the coffin of freedom in Australia. I'll leave you to ponder that one. Another story from Australia. Australian is to recruit foreign troops. The Australian Defence Force is looking to recruit foreign personnel from New Zealand, Canada, the United States, and Britain. The ADF hopes to attract overseas soldiers, sailors, and aircrew, as well as specialists, and such as special force officers, fighter pilots, and submarine warfare officers, with the sweetener of a fast-tracked path to Australian citizenship. The Royal Australian Navy has recently sent a delegation to Britain, where the government has announced cutbacks on defence spending to look into the possibility of recruiting sailors with engineering experience due to the competition with the mining industry. Now, of course, that all sounds well and good and sounds harmless. Of course, you know, they're saying we're only going to bring people from other nice countries like, you know, UK and US, who are good countries, and we should think that's fine. But it's a little bit odd, isn't it? I mean, you've got a country's defence force is there to protect its country. And one would assume that the defence force is composed of people who are citizens of that country. It's a point that's quite significant when it comes to any type of real conflict, because the people who are the citizens of the country are the ones best suited to defend it. Now, of course, we might say, well, people from the UK, we share the same values. People from the US, we share the same values. Indeed, we do. But once you open the door to having non-Australian troops, why would it stop there? Why would it stop merely at people from the UK? Why not Indians? I mean, after all, India is a Commonwealth country, I believe. I may be wrong on that. But obviously, India has a long association with the British Commonwealth. There are many, many countries around the world which have a close association with the West. Why not bring those in? And why even stop at that? Why not bring in Filipinos? Why not bring in anyone, really? Once you set the precedent for allowing that, and of course, having a foreign component in your own troops is not necessarily very good for the protection of your own people, and it doesn't set the priority at a very good level for the protection of one's own people. Moving on to another story that came out from Australia, actually from that amazing investigative research television show called Today Tonight, sarcasm implied. But this is actually quite an important story, sun scan cancer risk. Nanotechnology is being put to use by the beauty industry, allowing microscopic ingredients to penetrate into skin cells and posing a potential risk. Research shows that the use of nanotechnology in makeup and sunscreens may cause big problems and increases the risk of skin cancer. And now this whole issue of sunscreen and skin cancer is actually really interesting, and it's actually bigger than this one particular issue about the nanotechnology, which is obviously of a concern. But many independent researchers have been arguing for years that there is actually an overuse of sunscreen, and that the concept of sunscreen itself needs to be re-examined, because actually a lot of people are deficient in vitamin D. And there is actually a controversy of opinion here, contrary to what you may have, you know, been bombarded by the mainstream media for 20, 30 years. There is another school of thought which says you actually need a certain amount of sunshine, and a suntan is not necessarily a bad thing either. Of course, to go to extremes is not good. Getting badly sunburned is not good. For myself, I don't use sunscreen very rarely. I occasionally use it. Mainly, I don't go out in the midday sun. I go to the beach late in the afternoon. I try to get some good sunshine that way. I try to walk a bit, get the sunshine. But, you know, I don't lie baking in the sun with sunscreen plastered all over my body. And my skin's pretty good. My skin's pretty healthy. So I think that there's been a lot of misinformation about sunscreen. And it's just another one of those things to add to that list of, you know, things are not the way they seem, and in many cases, opposite to the way you've been told. Moving on to some international news now. Story here about censorship and the attempt to clamp down on copyright infringement. This is from Torrent Freak, a site that has a lot of news for people who download torrents from places like the Pirate Bay. The Pirate Bay Dancing add-on kills DNS and IP blockades. Efforts to censor the internet are increasing in the Western world. In the US, lawmakers are currently discussing legislation that could take out the Pirate Bay or disable access to it. In several other countries, such as Italy, Finland, and Belgium, courts have already ordered internet providers to block their users' access to the site. Demonstrating the futility of these efforts, a small group of developers today releases a browser add-on called the Pirate Bay Dancing. When Homeland Security's ICE unit started seizing domain names last year, a group decided to code a browser add-on to redirect the affected websites to their new domains. The release went viral, and by now more than 200,000 people have installed the add-on. ICE, which is Homeland Security actually in the US, was not happy with this and asked Mozilla to pull the add-on from their site. However, Mozilla denied the request, arguing that this type of censorship may threaten the open internet. And this really illustrates the point that the issue of downloading and copyright is actually inextricably connected with the issues of censorship and freedom on the internet, which have far greater implications. They have massive implications for political activism, for the ability of people to express their point of view, and the use of copyright infringement laws to basically restrict people's freedom is one reason why I am very much against the draconian copyright legislation that they're constantly trying to bring in many countries. But also on a more philosophical level, I actually do not agree with the viewpoint that the downloading of or sharing of material that may be copyrighted, that the sharing of that by allowing other people to download it is a crime. I totally dispute that. I think that the technology has simply moved ahead from the olden times. You're not stealing, you're merely making a duplicate. The laws need to be adapted to understand that. The prices need to drop. The services need to be built to make it cheaper to download so that people will turn to the more, I guess, authorized services rather than the unauthorized ones because they get a better quality. But the price needs to be much, much lower. But the idea of prosecuting people merely for copying files and sharing them is ludicrous. It's to me as ludicrous as, say, the horse industry wanting to prosecute Ford when they were manufacturing the Model T Ford because they were stealing business from the horses. Well, yes, that's what technology does. It changes everything and some people lose out. But you don't respond to that in a democracy by bringing in draconian nanny state legislation to crush those who are using the technology that is actually undermining what some people were profiteering from. Now, finally, I'm going to get into a much more dark and sinister topic, and we're going to be talking about this in more depth. I've got an article here by Naomi Wolf, how Congress has signed its own arrest warrants in the NDAA Citizen Arrest Act. This is from Naomi Wolf. I never thought I would have to write this, but incredibly, Congress has now passed the National Defense Appropriations Act with Amendment 1031, which allows for the military detention of American citizens. The amendment is so loosely worded that any American citizen could be held without due process. The language of this bill can be read to assure Americans that they can challenge their detention, but many people do not realize what this means. At Guantanamo and in other military prisons, one's lawyer calls are monitored, witnesses for one's defense are not allowed to testify, and one can be forced into nudity and isolation. Incredibly, 93 senators voted to support this bill. Now, we're going to be getting into that straight after the break. Please stay with us and we'll be right back.
Corn and Bullion is a family-owned and operated business that has helped many families and friends in protecting their assets, and we would like to do the same for you. In addition to coins and bullion, we now offer Patriot safes, ammunition, Berkey water products, gift certificates, wristbands, and our new silver pool, a new way to guarantee silver by prepaying at a locked price. We can even help you set up a metals IRA account. Call us at 512-646-6440 for more details. As always, we buy, sell, and trade precious metals and cater to those with all sizes of coin collections. We're located at 7304 Burnett Road, Suite A, about a half a mile north of Koenig, next to the Ikebon Sushi and the Genie Car Wash. We're open Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, Saturdays, 10 to 5. Visit us at CapitalCoinAndBullion.com or call 512-646-6440.
Are you being harassed by debt collectors with phone calls, letters, or even lawsuits? Stop debt collectors now with the Michael Maris Proven Method. Michael Maris has won 6 cases in federal court against debt collectors, and now you can win too. You'll get step-by-step instructions in plain English on how to win in court using federal civil rights statutes, what to do when contacted by phone, mail, or court summons, how to answer letters and phone calls, how to get debt collectors out of your credit report, how to turn the financial tables on them and make them pay you to go away. The Michael Maris Proven Method is the solution for how to stop debt collectors. Personal consultation is available as well. For more information, please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the blue Michael Maris banner or email michaelmaris@yahoo.com. That's ruleoflawradio.com or email michaelmiras@yahoo.com to learn how to stop debt collectors now.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back to Truth News. Well, for the rest of the show, I'm welcoming John Bursell, aircraft engineer, expert in many topics related to aircraft and, of course, 9/11. John, having researched this topic for many years. John, welcome back to Truth News.
G'day, Herowin. It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's good. We've got another year kicking off. I'm you know, I've made a commitment to just keep going. I'm not going to stop. Not going to lose my momentum. And I want to continually remind people of what they need to be thinking about, and to also try and, I guess, help people to know what they can do. And one of the things I want to talk about perhaps later in the show is how we can get people a bit more engaged, and how do we can deal with this feeling that people have that they can't do much about what's going on in the world, because I think they can. But John, we were just getting in there at the end of the last segment to the NDAA Citizen Arrest Act. What's your take on this?
Well, I've been watching it over the last few weeks. Obviously, Obama signed it on New Year's Eve in Hawaii. And, yeah, I mean, it's just an increasing degradation of American civil liberties and loss of civil rights. And obviously, you were talking also about Australia now looking for soldiers outside of its own borders. It's just indicative of the times, you know. The people are aware that the wars are fraudulent and no one wants to go to war, so we have to search for poorer and poorer people to send to our wars. And then, obviously, we're reducing the rights of the people back at home to protest and to resist, naming them terrorists and putting them away for undetermined periods of time without habeas corpus. So yeah, it's just more of a sign of the times. And just before we get started off, I'd just like to say that if obviously some people believe it's the end of the world this year, and I just want to throw out a bet there of $1,000 in gold that on the 22nd of December people can collect from me if I'm wrong, that the world's not going to end this year and we've got to keep fighting.
Yeah, so true. I mean, of course it may end, but you know, I think that it could end any year. And there's always these scares, you know. Every few years, there's a new scare that is kind of used for a bit of profiteering. It's used for a lot of people who just want to hype things up. Some people make money out of it. People like to have things to kind of be afraid of as well. It seems to be part of human nature. But,
well, I think the new age movement's definitely held us back in a way, because people are sort of, you know, imagining things are going to change. It's the same as religious movements. I mean, they all think that, you know, God's going to step in and save the day. But the fact is, things are getting worse. It's our fault, and we've got to stand up, and we've got to keep talking and keep working, like you said, against tyranny as it gets worse and worse every year.
Yeah, that's like I was saying on my previous show, that a lot of people also get caught up in thinking that World War III is going to start, and when they think about this, they think that the whole world's going to, as we know, is going to end, and so it actually inhibits them from doing anything. It has this weird reverse effect, and I really want to cut through that as well. And you know, I really want to say to people, look, don't worry about whether World War III is going to start, because it may not, and even if it does, you know, you need to engage. And I'm actually thinking about sort of building a checklist of some kind, and working with people on it to see what we can set up as a checklist for how a concerned citizen today can be engaged and can feel that they are actually doing something that's meaningful. I don't know what you think about that, John. But
well, I mean, there's many simple ways. I mean, at the moment, my activism's dropped right back due to financial constraints and family. You know, things that I've got to attend to at the moment. So, I mean, I've just dropped back to talking to people in the workplace and to, you know, blogging away on Facebook. Every day I put up a story of interest related to the issues that we'll be talking about today and other important issues, and, you know, spreading the word amongst my, you know, 1,700 or so friends on Facebook that I've built up over the last couple of years. And I think that's the sort of thing that people need to do. They just need to demonstrate their interest by getting involved and learning about the world and passing the information on to their fellow man. Because, as you know, you're pointing out, you're going to continue your rage this year and continue the passage of information.
Yeah,
that's the way that these things start. That's the way that the Occupy movement started worldwide, was through the passage of information and people figuring out the situation and what the causes of this terrible situation the world's in today. And that only happened through people talking about these issues, getting off the television, getting involved, attending events. I mean, you know, quite often, you know, we attend a film screening here or there. We go to a rally when it's something we're interested in or passionate about. You know, I'm involved in a couple of causes at the moment, and I demonstrate on the ground with my feet, and people need to do that also.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I'm actually really, I would really like to visit Iran this year. I'm actually thinking about, I'd like to go there because I've been looking at some. Yeah, I was just looking at some images today on YouTube from Iran. It's actually a beautiful place.
It is. And it's really a European, country. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that. It's not really part of Arabia as such, or not an Arab country. It's more of a European country, and it's got a vast history, and some of the top, academics and scientists in the world are Iranian.
Yeah, and, here's something you could do. Like, if you want to have a holiday, instead of maybe going to Koh Samui, why not go to Iran? You know, because, that's a way we can actually help the Iranians. We can go there, visit their country, talk to people, take photographs, shoot video, because we get very little from Iran. You know, we really don't know what's going on over there, because everyone's, we're blocked off from it, and it's a beautiful country. They're threatening the most terrible things against Iran, and they are our, human brothers and sisters over there who are people who are just like us. And I really think we just need to make that effort, because we see this build up, and I don't know what your take on it, John, is, but I mean, everyone's saying that the attack on Iran is going to happen this year. Well, what do you think?
Well, we've been hearing that, since, 2004?
Indeed.
On and off.
Indeed,
the threat, obviously, if we look back to the PNAC document, Rebuilding America's Defences, it's definitely one of the primary targets, for control of the cheap oil and also geopolitical issues. But, I mean, Iran's been the most prolific at calling out the United States and its aims, its empire, basically calling out what the empire is doing, what it's up to, and calling out the crimes of America also. You know, without Iran, really, there'd be basically no voice in the world that would be questioning what America's up to. So, I mean, they're a target for America for numerous reasons, and, it's always good for an election campaign in America to be going to war. Mind you, I think it's rather risky at the moment, where we see Ron Paul doing so well in the polls with the anti-war vote coming from the conservative side of politics, which is astounding. And, I've just spent a little bit of time looking through some of Ron Paul's policies, which I don't agree with wholeheartedly, but okay. I definitely agree with his fiscal, policy about reducing debt and taking back control of the American currency, and also, getting out of all these wars and the thousands and thousands of American bases worldwide that cost the American people literally trillions of dollars. It's great to see that those sorts of ideas now can draw such a big vote from the conservative side of politics.
Yeah, that's interesting. Ron Paul's policies are sort of non-interventionist to an extreme, which is maybe a little more than I would agree to. I had Craig Isherwood from the CEC on last month, and we were sort of talking a bit about the difference between some of their policies, which are also libertarian, compared to the Ron Paul libertarian. And I tend to think of some...
Yeah, they're similar to my libertarian socialist sort of, or libertarian left, or whatever you want to call it. They like some of the constraints, but they like the liberty of and the way that the business operates is a lot freer and less government involvement. But also, the way that money is controlled by reserve banks is completely different under what they suggest.
Right, of course, yeah. And
it's the currency's backed by real value, gold or whatever else it might be backed by, but it's actually got real value. It's not a pure fiat currency dominated by a reserve bank.
Well, of course, that's we saw what happened to Gaddafi when he attempted to bring in a gold-backed currency. It's not welcomed by the international banking cartels. They don't want it, because I think it would undermine their power very quickly. And the other thing I think about the US dollar is that is essentially underwritten by the US military. I don't know.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. I mean, they've given this unnatural, unfair advantage throughout the world with the American dollar. Well, the fact that every time, stock markets start to crash around the world, people run to the US dollar, it's sort of an insanity, but it's just a fact. That's how it is, that the American dollar goes up when stock markets collapse because people are looking for a cash position and it's the reserve currency. Meanwhile, the real value of the American dollar is being reduced. So I don't know when the chickens come home to roost or not. I suppose it's when the American military collapse, or when they run out of money and they simply can't run their military anymore, then there'll be a massive collapse of the US dollar. Until that happens, who knows how long it can go on for. But it's obviously, I know the CEC have suggested that it's going to collapse many times, but it continues to go on.
Sure. We're just going to break again now. And look, when we come back, I think you've got some 9/11 news to bring us. We'll get into that. So please bear with us.
This is Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper that fell on the afternoon of September 11th.
The government says that fire brought it down. However, 1,500 architects and engineers concluded it was a controlled demolition.
Over 6,000 of my fellow service members have given their lives.
And thousands of my fellow first responders are dying.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
I'm a structural engineer.
I'm a New York City correction officer.
I'm an Air Force pilot.
I'm a father who lost his son.
We're Americans, and we deserve the truth.
Go to rememberbuilding7.org today.
Could printed books soon be a thing of the past? Apparently, a lot of kids these days are exchanging book pages for web pages. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back to tell you what's happening to literacy.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
Forget books and magazines. A recent study by the UK's National Literacy Trust found that text messages are the number one reading material for kids today, and numbers 2 and 3 are email and Facebook. That's not surprising, since cell phones and computers outnumber novels in most homes. We adults are obviously not setting a very good example. Of course, text messages are not known for their literary quality or for their outstanding spelling and grammar. In fact, they're some of the worst writing around. So if you want your kids to develop basic English skills, tell them to unplug from Facebook and turn off Twitter, then hand them an old-fashioned book. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com.
Welcome back to Truth News. Today I'm talking to John Bursell. We're running through a variety of international news, and we're just discussing the military build-up and the US dollar, and we're talking about the policies there of Ron Paul. One point I just wanted to make, John, was that I think in Australia, I think there is actually a strong case for having infrastructure that is essential to the entire country, not owned by private enterprise, and that is actually what Craig Isherwood proposes for the Australian setup. So things like electricity, telephone, those basic core infrastructures, not privately owned. Well, what do you think about that?
Well, I'm a supporter of government owned, electricity, medical care, the basic infrastructure, same as what Craig is saying. And, a lot of the policies of the CSC I definitely think are pertinent to Australia. Being an island nation of a small population, obviously America's a different story with, Ron Paul's got this free trade idea with just a basic flat tariff, which will probably work in the US because it's got a large population and, it's got advantages in manufacturing due to its situation and resources, etc. But in Australia, it sort of probably wouldn't work because we've got such a small population and we're spread over such a large area that we need that infrastructure to be maintained for the people in the country, etc. Being an agricultural economy and resource economy, we need that sort of support. So, I don't agree with Ron Paul's view, but what I will say to people is I fully support him in the presidential campaign because he's the only honest politician that's running.
Absolutely.
And,
yeah.
And he's a man that in America's case, I think a lot of his policies make a lot of sense, at least to get the economy going and to increase the job situation, remove the tax on labour. All these ideas are constitutional ideas, and they were the foundation of the American success story. So, I think he's got good reasons for all the policies he suggests. They're not policies that I think necessarily could work. Like, he relies on the philanthropists and the doctors to, out of the kindness of their heart, to serve medical help to the people, the poor people in America, you know, without any basic health care, things like that, you know, that's a libertarian type idea, you know, which is you pay for what you use, but you're allowed to achieve wealth in a very free, fair, open, transparent world, you know. So it's a dream that these people hold with this sort of capitalist free market economy idea, and it definitely can work. But as you know, we've never seen a proper communist model. We've never seen a proper capitalist model. There's always corruption that gets in between these models. So no one's really, I don't think anyone's really sure what works, but I know that America during the 1800s was very successful. And, you know, I think that's what Ron Paul wants to get back to, is the sort of way it was there, where the states control certain things, like his idea of, you know, letting go of the war on drugs is brilliant, and bringing, you know, legalizing hemp, which is just would mean an industrial boom and a taxation boom within America. You know, it really could turn the country around, just simple changes like that. So, you know, a lot of the policies he's proposing will lead to great wealth for America. I think there's no doubt about that. If he can get there, with the media working as hard as they can against him, you know, not really even mentioning him in Australia until the last few weeks, even though he's been a presidential candidate of note many, many times and has won many of the debates, he's only really just come onto the radar just in the last few weeks.
Yeah, he still barely gets a mention. And of course, he was a second place runner at Iowa. Then suddenly, this Rick Santorum took off, and then he moved to third place right in the last couple of days, which meant because he was third place, he didn't really have to be mentioned again. But look, you know,
but Santorum doesn't have the base of supporters to go any further. So really, it's a two-horse race now between Romney and Paul. So that's a very exciting place for America to be. At least those ideas that Paul's putting forward are going to get out there, and Romney's likely to move in some ways towards some of those ideas to maintain his hold. You know,
it is. And look, I think that one of the biggest things that we need to be aware of that needs to be tackled is the giant monopolies, and these are corporate government, you know, corporatist monopolies, and that's what Ron Paul is targeting. That's what most, you know, truly progressive people in politics are looking at from both spectrums, you know, whether they're
the
left or
movement demonstrated that.
Yeah, and you know, it's the corporate monopoly that crushes freedom. It doesn't give you good choice. It doesn't give you good choice in terms of things you can buy, like food, medicine, all these things. Like, you know, we have debates about whether, say, healthcare should be government subsidized, whether we should essentially have a universal healthcare system. But the real debate here is, why, you know, should we allow the big pharmaceuticals to completely monopolize medicine, because we don't get the choice we need, and we end up with a lot of things that are actually not necessarily properly tested. They're pushed into the system for profit, and whether it's a system that's based on like medical insurance or whether it's a universal healthcare system, you know, one of them being a free enterprise system, the other one being essentially a socialized system, you get the same result because it's a monopoly. And I really think we need to be tackling the monopoly problem. That's, you know, that's where our questions should be.
Well, for sure, I agree. I suppose we should move on. But anyway, I suggest to people that have been, I know there's quite a lot of arguments on Facebook and other mediums about Ron Paul. I just suggest people look for the good in these people and support that. And that's sort of pertinent to the 9/11 subjects I'm going to talk about now.
Sure.
You know, about sort of looking for the good in things and looking for what's supportable, you know, for the right reasons, and not getting caught up in arguments and in ideas that are really wasteful of everybody's time and energy at this critical time in human history, you know?
Yeah.
And, so I mentioned to you I wanted to talk about 9/11 because there's been a couple of new papers that have been released about the Pentagon attack, which has been a bugbear of the 9/11 truth movement and has led to a lot of wasted time. It's actually led to many people leaving the 9/11 truth movement, I think, over the 10 years that it's been running.
It certainly has.
The fact that it's a hell of a lot of wasted energy, and I know we've put a lot of energy into that debate ourselves.
Yeah. And so you mentioned earlier that there's been some new papers published on Journal of 9/11 Studies, I believe.
Well, there's one. Yeah, there was one that was like a discussion paper that was on Scholars for 9/11 Truth and Justice, but also there's been this latest paper that sort of brings all the work that was started off by Frank Legge that actually came out of my suggestion. You know, quite a few years back, I was sensing that the Pentagon debate around things that Pilots for Truth were putting forward and around what the CIT, the Citizens Investigation Team, were putting forward was going to become more and more of a problem leading up to the 10th anniversary. So we had a number of scholars, and now also with the consensus panel that David Ray Griffin set up, it's really sort of, we're trying to figure out now that we've sort of reached the 10-year mark, that the movement sort of in a way, it's died away now, but really historically we're trying to look for now what it is that we did and what it is that we have to say about 9/11, and what are the facts, and what are the things that are just theories, and what are the things that really have no basis in evidence and should be completely discarded. Now, this latest paper, that's going to be quite controversial with the so-called researchers that I come across on places like Facebook and other blogs, etc., and the forums, you know, the forums that we used to run at 9/11 Oz, etc. We have these people that call themselves researchers that don't have any idea about the scientific method. And I suggest everybody go to Wikipedia and look up the scientific method and actually get an understanding of what that means and how evidence is assessed and how, you know, how we look at a problem and how we come up with a, you know, with a theory, and then we move to the, you know, to the stage where we can start to talk about it as a working hypothesis, and then move on to, you know, come to some sort of conclusion about an event. Now, this this physicist, PhD physics, John D. Wyndham, has taken the time to look into the Pentagon issue, I think based around the consensus panel, because obviously people like Barry Zwicker and other people that have you know, a high position in the 9/11 truth movement that aren't scientists, you know, people like David Ray Griffin also had a view of the Pentagon that no plane hit there. He's also not a scientist, he's a theologian, and it was sort of time for the scientists to look into this issue, which wasn't really their realm, you know, and that's, I think that's been the problem. The only people that really had much knowledge about aircraft and aircraft crashes were the pilots for 9/11 truth, which have continued to put forward theories and arguments that are based on very little evidence, if any, and mostly opinion.
Yeah.
They needed to challenge the subject and have a look at the scientific basis of the, you know, the proposal that a plane flew over the Pentagon and nothing, you know, hit the Pentagon. And as I found, and as you've found, and as everyone else that's actually taken the time to read the scientific papers, to look at the data, look at the, you know, look at the real evidence, and look for the photographs that are very difficult to find. And got to remember that the Pentagon's been a very difficult issue because there hasn't been much information or video footage provided. It's sort of been set up in a way to cause controversy. And, you know, he's done this new paper now, and I suggest everybody have a read in it, and the appendixes, which go into quite a lot of detail about the evidence. It's called The Pentagon Attack, Problem with Theories, Alternative to a Large Plane Impact. Now, as it says in the abstract to you, the widespread belief among those who question the official account of 9/11 that a large plane did not hit the Pentagon on 9/11 is unsupported by the evidence. The failure of the 9/11 truth movement to reach a consensus on this issue after almost a decade is largely due to the failure to, apply the scientific method to each proposed theory. This paper, by so applying the evidence to each proposed theory, shows that a large plane hitting the Pentagon is by far the most plausible theory. And he goes into quite a lot of detail about all the different things that have been put forward. And I actually went to the trouble after reading this paper to going back to viewing the first film I saw after Loose Change, which was In Plain Sight. Do you remember that film?
Well, yeah, that was probably the first one I saw. I think it came out shortly after the first Loose Change, which was very, the first Loose Change was very different to Loose Change 2. And so Loose Change and In Plain Sight actually shared a lot of theories, didn't they? I mean, they both talked about the pods and the flash and the Pentagon, you know, perhaps being a missile and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, no, I actually distributed In Plain Sight there for a little while. Right. But anyway, maybe we can get back into that in a little more depth after the break.
Yeah, let's nail that in the final segment. Be right back after this break.
City bombing. Top 10 reasons to question the official story. Reason number 2, why was the ATF AWOL? Paramedic Tiffany Bible who was on the scene within 5 minutes, has stated in an affidavit that agents of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms told her that they were not in their office that morning. EMT Catherine Mallett also overheard one agent say to another, quote, "Is that why we got the page to not come in today?" End quote. Bruce Shaw, as interviewed on KFOR-TV, was also told by ATF agents that they had been paged to not come into work. The ATF initially denied these claims and now variously claim that one of their agents was in a free-falling elevator, which has been disproven, or that they had been in an all-night stakeout, or that they had been at a golf tournament. As they try to sort out their lies, all we want to know is, did the ATF receive a warning, and if so, why did they not pass it on to others in the Murrah Building? For more information, go to OKCBombingTruth.com.
At HempUSA.org, we offer chemical-free products to people around the world, detoxifying, self-healing, while rebuilding the immune system. We urge our listeners to please consider our largest-selling product, Microplant Powder. Our microplant powder is rich in silica and probiotics to help rebuild the immune system and to create a healthy stomach flora. Microplant powder is excellent for daily intake and is perfect to add to your storage shelter. We urge our listeners to please visit us at hempusa.org. And remember, all of our products are chemical-free and healthy to eat. We constantly strive to give you the best service, highest quality, and rapid shipping anywhere. And we offer free shipping on orders over $95 in the U.S. Please visit us at hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. That's 908-691-2608. See what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you at hempusa.org.
When you're sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Welcome back to the show. Well, in the final segment, we are continuing with our discussion of some 9/11 questions, and we're looking at one of the most controversial and vexed questions about what really happened on 9/11, which is an important one. You know, what happened at the Pentagon? I don't want it to diminish its importance. And, you know, before you start sending me hate mail about this, just understand that I have no intention to diminish the importance of asking questions about what happened at the Pentagon. And I'm sure, John, you are in agreement about that.
I am, yeah, but I just want people to realise it's the same with the Ron Paul debate. Now, look for the things that we can all agree on with 9/11. Go to the consensus panel that was set up by David O. Griffin. Look at the points there that they've laid out that they all agree on. I think there's about 18 points or something now that a group of panel of experts and scientists, including researchers that aren't scientists or PhD physics professors or chemistry PhD people like, frankly, but just normal people as well, people that are researchers or media experts, they're all there, and they're coming up with a consensus on what they believe are the points that we can all agree on and that are backed by the evidence. Now, the simple fact is, a rational scientific person looks at the Pentagon and the evidence is presented. If you look at it properly and rationally, you'll find there's no evidence that proves that no plane hit the Pentagon. And when you look at more deeply and you take a rational look at the energy levels required, the energy levels created by a super high-speed aircraft crash in an armor-plated building, and you understand that an aircraft is a very lightweight structure that only has some very dense parts, but most of the aircraft is basically a balloon of surrounded by aluminium. And you look at the crash scene, you actually realise, and the damage path, and you actually take the time to look at the digital flight data recording that's now been properly cracked by scientists, not by pilots that aren't particularly well educated in that subject matter. And you find that the evidence now, after 10 years, is very clear. It's very clear that most likely a large passenger jet, and even more likely, Flight 77 actually did hit the Pentagon. As hard, as difficult as that is to believe, looking at the scene and the photos, and as we were talking about in plain sight, and I just reviewed that film again after not looking at it for 6 years, and it was laughable, actually, what was presented by Dave Weinquist in that film. I actually brought Dave out to Australia.
Yeah, I remember
there at
that.
One stage for a conference back in 2007. And because I thought that, you know, he was presenting a lot of interesting information. Now, if you look at the pods, you know, they've been discounted, and I have to agree that I did think there was something there, but I've taken the time to look at it again now, and I tell you, there's no evidence there for pods that's provable. You know, there's some shadows and some strange angles on the camera and some unusual things, it appears, but when you actually look in detail, there's not. With the flash is quite obviously the main equipment center, the electronic center of the aircraft as it enters the building. That's what causes the flash. Right. There's also flashes as the engines enter the building. And you take the time to examine the Pentagon and the evidence that they put forward with the Pentagon, and his evidence is based, it's ridiculous and it's contrived as well, because he doesn't show you the pictures of the thousands of pieces of aluminium all over the lawn. You know, he makes out like, this punch-out hole is most likely some sort of missile hole, but if we actually look at the trajectory of the plane and we understand, the fluid dynamics of the aircraft as it enters the building and all the pressure that builds up, or possibly some heavy object hitting that wall and punching it out, and we can see the trail of material that comes out of the hole if we look at the right photos, not the photos after it's all been cleaned up. You know, it's very clear that a large plane, by the witness testimony, did hit the building. And if we look at CIT's evidence in a proper balanced view, and we look across all the witness testimony, we find the majority of the witness testimony puts the plane in the official trajectory. So does the digital flight data recorder information. And we find that, you know, the witnesses that CIT offer up, the ones that saw the actual plane hit the building, say that it hit the building. There's no credible flyover witness at all. So if we look at all the information that's been put forward and the information by Pilots for Truth about the G-force required to pull the plane out, and we look at what the scientists find when they actually look at the digital flight data, we find that it only comes around 2 G's, and the plane's rated to 2.5 G's, even though the Pilots for Truth said it was up around 10 G's to pull out. That's completely wrong, because they calculated the G on it turning from a direct straight path, like basically turning on a dime. That's not how planes turn. They turn in an arc. And, you know, when Frank Legg and many other people now have looked at this information, we find that all this stuff that Pilots for Truth have put out, including their impossible speed claims, which I've had a go at disproving, are all garbage, you know. So, you know, what we've got to do is we've got to realise that, and that's why, the Building 7 campaign didn't list Pilots for Truth. That's why 911truth.org don't list Pilots for Truth. That's why architects and engineers, generally speaking, try to stay away from the Pilots for Truth, because they realise that not the people in the group, there's plenty of good people in the group, but the leaders of the group are putting forward, false arguments that aren't backed by evidence. And we just have to deal with it. We have to say, right, okay, we can't put forward these arguments to people because we don't have the evidence. Now, it doesn't matter whether it looks wrong to you and there's no video of it. That doesn't mean that you're right to say there's no plane hit the building. That's wrong. You know, you have to have the evidence. And in my view, we've had the most success when we've presented ourselves as reasonable people. And the way we do that is by accepting certain parts of the government story of 9/11 as being correct, because we don't have the evidence to prove anything else. Yeah. And if people can't realise that's rational, then they're wasting their time and they're wasting energy, and they're actually destroying work, good work that people are trying to do to get our credibility up. Now, pretty much the campaign, you know, we got to nearly everyone that was interested in the subject. You know, the information's out there now. We've got the Journal of 9/11 Studies with, you know, hundreds of articles and papers, scientific papers. Use that resource and put forward the best information. It's the same with a lot of these other things that people continue to go on about. I mean, I know we've had a good look into the chemtrails, we've had a look into some of these other things, HARP, etc. I mean, I know you had a question that you saw some conspiracy theories floating around about Exmouth.
If you've got any insight on that, that would be extremely valuable.
When you mentioned it, I straight away said to you, I thought there was some low-frequency type antenna array there that was used for a navigation system or something. Well, I actually had a quick look on Wikipedia, and if you look at it, you actually find there's a very low-frequency transmitter there that's used, for radio transmissions. And, it's not part, I thought it was part of the LORAN network, which is the low range. It's a sort of basically a navigation system that was used before GPS. You know, and there's nearly always rational explanations for these things. The same with HAARP. Now, whether a HAARP, they're using HAARP to modify weather, who knows? But the facts are, if you just go to Wikipedia and do some research on what they actually use that insulation for, there's lots of very rational, practical uses that they're using it for. And the idea of earthquakes was looked into by Dr. Stephen Jones. Rational people were very upset that he even looked into man-made earthquakes. But he's found that, you know, the most rational idea is that they'd use some sort of sonic device actually at the fault line to stimulate earthquakes, not some array that's up in Alaska. You know, the idea of transmitting and reflecting enough energy to the ground to trigger an earthquake is basically laughable from a physical perspective. It's the same as people pointing in the sky and saying they see a contrail, the back of an aircraft, that it's a chemtrail. It's blatantly ridiculous. You know, I've been looking into it for many years now. I can't find any evidence in Australia that there's ever been a chemtrail sprayed out of a commercial jet, but still people continue to carry on about it. People, just get back to the things that we know. We know it's true. We know the corruption that's going on in the US. We know what's happening with the bank of fraud and the bank of bailouts. We know what the story is with Obama creating a police state. You know, we can see all these problems. The global warming, fraud taxation is quite obvious too, if you take the time to look into that. There's, you know, plenty of things that are going on that are a problem to our society. And, you know, why people want to waste time on asserting things as facts or as impossible or whatever else, when they don't have any proper evidence, it boggles my mind. It's just such a waste of energy. There's so many good things to fight for.
Extremely well said, John. You know, there's plenty to keep you busy with to really make a difference on issues that you have really solid information on.
Fluoride, you know?
We've got some pretty solid...
No one's fighting that argument at the moment, as I can see, you know, or not in the truth movement in Sydney anyway.
Look, it boggles my mind too, and I have a lot of trouble understanding it. I've spent a bit of time on Skid Row Radio here in Sydney. I've been going down there and doing some morning shows with Jack, who runs the show there part of the time. Yeah, and... look, sometimes, some mornings, the whole show is taken up with people calling in about these HAARP claims and about the chemtrails. And, these fringe ideas that have very little evidence to back them up, you might say, well, it doesn't matter, you know, it's just part of the mix. But they actually end up dominating so much of the time. And then when people are listening to this, or people who are, you know, maybe sitting on the fence on some subjects, when they listen into this, they think you're just a bunch of nutters. And so it creates this closed wall kind of community of people who are only in the deepest, deep end of the pool of sort of the rabbit hole, or whatever you want to call it, you know, of conspiracy theories. And it locks everyone else out, because they want to go into these totally unproven speculative areas, and they'll dominate all of their thought, all of their discussion with these. And I sort of feel like we're not getting anywhere. You know, we're not improving the world.
And it's terrible, especially for people that try to put forward a rational view. Like when I had that debate with that so-called physics expert on 2GB last year about 9/11, you know, he actually defaulted to a less rational view on the Pentagon than me. And he was actually on the other side. He was saying, oh, I don't really know what happened there. You know, he tried to go the other way because, he's in a debate with me, which is just shows how weak that issue is, you know, that someone's wants to steer away from that issue when they're trying to attack us on the thing that we know is most credible, which is building 7. And, people forget with 9/11 about all the corruption, all the lies that were told. I mean, I know there's activists out there that people say are agents, like John Gold, that, you know, literally could talk for, 10 hours on the radio about just lies that have been told, and about, you know, obviously conspiracies between people to cover things up and to lie. Now, that's not that exciting, but that's where the action is in winning a debate, is looking at the stuff that you can prove, you know.
Yeah, and just finally, I just want to mention that, you know, getting back to that initial time when the questions about 9/11 were surfacing, we had a lot of questions, you had a lot of questions, I had a lot of questions. I never thought about the Pentagon until I think I saw an article in a newspaper saying how ridiculous it was that there was this theory that this French guy had proposed that the Pentagon wasn't hit by a plane. But it had never even occurred to me. But I had questions about 9/11 just based on the general feeling that it was an inside job, because how quickly they went into Iraq and how they used it.
Quite obviously a military coup, yeah.
Yeah, and I feel that these fringe theories have distracted us away from those really core theoretical and logical understandings of what was really going on. So, look, we're going to have to wind up. Thanks so much, John.
No worries. It might be unpopular to be rational and reasonable, but I'm going to continue to do it. I'll check you later. Thanks, Herwood.
And that's a wrap from Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be back next week, and we look forward to your comments and criticisms. Please get back to us with any thoughts. See you next week.
The Bible remains the most popular book in the world, yet countless readers are frustrated because they struggle to understand it. Some new translations try to help by simplifying the text, but in the process can compromise the profound meaning of the Scripture. Enter the Recovery Version. First, this new translation is extremely faithful and accurate, but the real story is the more than 9,000 explanatory footnotes. Difficult and profound passages are opened up in a marvelous way, providing an entrance into the riches of the Word beyond which you've ever experienced before. Bibles for America would like to give you a free Recovery Version simply for the asking. This comprehensive yet compact study Bible is yours just by calling us toll-free at 1-888-551-0102 or by ordering online at freestudybible.com. That's freestudybible.com.